Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789 in Texas. Same number on the line, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I remember going back early on in the Iraq War and the fact that we were using uranium-depleted bombs. And, you know, we talk about what happens in war. And as you stated, if you don't see it, you know, then you don't think about it. But when you see it, and they continue to show the carnage in Ukraine, then the people, as you stated, it tugs on their heartstrings and they want something done and they want that to stop. But you don't then just say, well, let's send our troops in. I was listening to and reading the responses by many on the other side of this. Well, we need to stop worrying about what Russia will do if we escalate things, and Russia needs to start worrying about us. We're the big guys. You know, we're the ones. We're the ones who they need to be fearing us, and they need to be responding to what we say. And I'm listening to people, and I'm saying how childish, you know, how stupid. These are people who are in leadership positions in our country. And their response is, we're the big guys. They should be worried about us and not the least bit concerned about what happens in the escalation of all of this.
Well, yeah. I mean, two things. One, if we did have videos and photographs shown to us of all of the damage we have caused in our military endeavors in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere, would we have had the public clamoring to stop the war? I mean, quite frankly, that is what began to happen in Vietnam when people began to realize what was happening to the Vietnamese as well as to Americans. It caused us. So, you know,
you had the My Lai massacre, and that began to change things.
Yeah, and so, you know, the American people should understand that war is hell, and whether you're on the delivery side or the receiving side, you're participating in it in a terrible way. Now, this question of whether who should be worried about who, that sounds like kids on a playground, and we should understand that we're dealing with nuclear countries here, and part of the detente that existed for over 50 years after World War II, in spite of the fact that we had a Cold War, was that we did have two parties, Russia and the United States, who were very, very careful not to confront one another directly on the battlefield for the very reason that we worried about the extent to which a confrontation on the battlefield would lead to a national outcry for raising the ante in order to defend troops. If we're fighting Russia on the battlefield and Russia begins to lose on the battlefield, what pathway do they have to secure victory other than upping the ante with respect to the kinds of weaponry they use? And people who understand that, understand military strategy, and understand the danger of nuclear warfare, happily prevailed for 60 years after World War II and kept us from getting into a direct field military conflict with Russia. And Russia was careful to avoid the same with us. And so should we now think that we're free to do that in Ukraine? I think the wiser heads are prevailing in Washington, including Biden's, and saying, no, Ukraine is not the kind of turf over which we ought to get into a direct battle with Russia, such that it could escalate to the point of nuclear weapons.
You know, Sandy, when you watch what Russia is going through right now, their heralded military, it seems to not be, you know, their ground troops seem to almost be like a paper lion or a paper tiger. They've got their hands full. They're crying for help from China. Their military is bogging down. They clearly are not going to have the resources necessary to sustain this. And, you know, the more that this goes on, the more dangerous in my mind. But after all, who am I? Only an average everyday citizen. But I can discern myself, Sandy, that that's not a good thing, that Russia is asking for support financially and others from China, and you know, and yet, you know, we have done what many think, and I think is the right thing, with the sanctions. But then you don't turn around and say, oh, see, they're not as tough as they said they were. I mean, because at some point in time, the more that goes on, the more, you know, you're kind of asking for it. You know what I mean?
Well, a couple of things about that. One, they aren't as tough as they seem to be. That same factor was revealed with respect to the United States and Vietnam. We attacked Vietnam. We had military might off the top of the scale, and Vietnam was just a weak country with some support from other countries outside. And what happened? They withstood all of our efforts for years and inflicted great casualties on us, and basically brought us to our knees because we found out how difficult it was to invade a country that was resistant. And I think that's the problem Russia's having. They're simply running into the age-old problem that it's very hard to invade a country that has a strong level of civilian and military resistance within it. Unless you're willing to just bomb it to smithereens. And while we say that Russia's been immoderate in what they've done, they clearly have not done that. They have an air capacity that should have permitted it to do whatever it wanted from the air, and it obviously exercised restraint in that regard. With respect to the sanctions are in some ways more humane than war, right? You're not firing guns at one another. But the sanctions of the type that we've put on Russia have strangled its economy to the point where we're basically requiring that the Russian people be forced to experience great hardship, with the hope that the Russian people, after they've experienced great hardship, will exert some sort of pressure on the autocratic government to do something different. And see, that's the problem with the way we're thinking here, because is Russia really responsive? Is the Russian government and Putin really responsive to the people and the suffering of the people? Or are we inflicting suffering on the people of Russia, and they have an autocratic government with a president and essentially dictator who will do whatever it takes to sustain his power? And I think we have that second circumstance. And so we're sort of polarizing the national unity of the Russian people by forcing them to suffer at the hands of what Putin has deftly told them, and has probably correctly told them, is the result of American conduct. They've become stridently anti-American. We've polarized the country of Russia into an anti-American stance. We created the Cold War. We've set the table for decades of differential treatment in the world and a different environment in the world than we had going 10 years ago. So I think historians could look at this period, and absent a fair and just settlement of this war during this week of negotiations between Ukraine and Russia, this could be looked back on as a very, very troublesome time and a change in world affairs that could be very destructive. But deglobalization, an increase in polarization, and the potential for warfare.
You know, Sandy, when we get back on the other side, I want to talk with you about the possibility of negotiations finally taking hold. I think we're getting to a point where, you know, both sides are kind of feeling the pain in this, and maybe a little more willing. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is my guest. You can join us. We'll be right back.